When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
TF3 on a Monday this week, and things are a little bit different because, well, Nico, how you doing? It's international break. And
you good about yourself?
Yeah. It's international break. Isn't good, huh?
I mean, yeah. What, people have different opinions. I'm sure we'll talk about it to some extent, but yeah.
Why do you think there is such a sort of... avid rejection of international football?
Because I think generally speaking, from someone that consumes a lot of club football, as I'm sure all of us do, club football is generally of a higher level, just because the players get to know each other better. It's like there are more advantages from a logistical perspective to club football. You know, a manager gets to pick the exact pieces to the puzzle that he wants to put together. So generally, at the highest level of club football, we get to see the highest level of football. Whereas with international teams, sometimes, you know, the quality of opposition isn't always there. They have to play some, you know, really small country that in reality doesn't actually have much of a shot at competing with some of these great other teams, and so it's really hit or miss. There's not that many good games, and even when there are, it's just the quality of football, I think, goes down a lot. And so that's why I think generally people want to just continue with their club action, because it's just a little bit more entertaining at this point in time.
But do you not think that's the same as sort of saying, well, I don't know, you can sort of compare it to the job market for men and women, in that we've for a very long time favored maybe some of the male traits over female traits, but then we go, well, you know, or anyone who's sort of against the changing in the market might say, well, you know, this one's a better thing anyway. There's no need to go towards international. Everything seems geared towards league football rather than international. And the only way we're going to get better international football is by investing something in it, surely.
Yeah, and I would agree with that to a certain extent. I definitely agree with that when the competitions come around. Like, a lot of people talk about how the expansion of the World Cup to 48 teams, while the intentions from FIFA and Gianni Infantino might not necessarily be ones mired in morality or any other reason besides making more money. I find the argument that people make that, you know, it'll be a lesser quality of football not to be the best one, because, I mean, you know, your quality of football, or that statement rather, is largely subjective. You can have, you know, some of the smaller teams or some of the teams that have or are perceived to have less quality still put on a fantastic game. You don't need to have Germany and Italy or England v Spain every single game for it to be an entertaining game. And so with the tournaments, I am sort of for the expansion of it, because I want to see as many teams as possible in them. I want to see the smaller countries have a better chance of putting themselves on the world stage. And that opens, you know, the game up to different interpretations from different coaches, and we can see some cool things. So to some extent, I agree with that. But at the same time, I can definitely understand why the international break sort of interrupting the club season is frustrating to some people, because, like I said, I think the quality of football generally goes down.
It's sort of interesting, isn't it? Yeah, because a lot of people are happy to see a young or a smaller team do well, but less happy when they then make it much, much further in the tournament, because it means the big dogs that maybe bought the entertainment aren't playing, because obviously they've either been knocked out or fallen to the wayside too early. Chris, one of the people who was exciting and maybe at one time considered one of the smaller competitors in there was Wales, but they've been bringing through some youth. They've been mixing well with their old and their young, and it felt like it was going on a good way until Monday night, Wales lost 1-0 to Republic of Ireland, and that's it. They're out of World Cup qualification, which maybe seems a little bit harsh, but they're out now, and Republic of Ireland go through to the playoffs.
Yeah, Wales perhaps look like they've been harshly done by when you consider it's one defeat in their entire qualification, but that's mooted by the fact that they drew five games.
Yeah.
I do understand your characterization as a blending of old and young. I think Ben Woodburn has played fairly well. He came on tonight for a little cameo and looked a lot more dangerous than a lot of his teammates. But I think there was a slight over-reliance on Gareth Bale.
Absolutely.
Because they did just look very two-dimensional. Granted, the Republic of Ireland didn't come with the most expansive game plan in the world. And I think if you look at their goal even, it was very much a counter-attack that was actually very well put together with Harry Arter and James McLean. I just felt that Wales, they were very naive tonight, watching them. They really did kind of play into the Republic of Ireland's hands and let them do what Martin O'Neill set them up to do, which was to sit deep, soak up pressure, and then spring out. Because that's the thing, for a large portion of the game, until Croatia take that advantage in the other game, Wales only need a point. So it felt to me at times watching them, at least in the first half, as if they were sort of caught in two minds, trying to keep one foot on the ball and one foot on the pier.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And I think that was the problem.
Yeah, I did think it was a little bit strange. I mean, it's also maybe sort of the characterization of the two sides, because on one side we see, you know, the superstar of Gareth Bale. On the other side, we see the captain of David Myler, who's somewhat in the more football bloggy community become a bit more of a figure of fun, but maybe is taken more seriously by Martin O'Neill, because Martin O'Neill doesn't know what YouTube is.
Who was that, sorry, he said?
Myler.
He was very good tonight. He wasn't sensational on the ball, but his defensive responsibilities were taken care of time and time again. And I think if you're looking at him as a defensive midfielder, then you say, yeah, that's great. How that transfers to a tournament where maybe he's going to have to push things forward, I'm sure he would argue that's where Jeff Hendrick and Harry Arter come in, because Arter contributes to the goal with a really smart dummy. Hendrick is a bit more of craft, a bit more of guile, so you need that balance. And I would say, actually, looking at Wales, Republic of Ireland tonight, I thought they did have quite good balance. The defence, Shane Duffy and Kieran Clarke, again, they're not what the YouTube community might coin as modern defenders, in inverted commas, but they did what they needed to do and they were reliable. And I think we saw with the Euros that the teams like Iceland and that, like, can find some success by being quite a deep block, countering, using the assets that they've got in wide areas with pace or creativity, if that's wide or central, and catching teams out that overcommit. I think that's the discussion that perhaps that needs to be had, is have we reached a stage where we're almost snobbish towards that style of play, because it's not taking the ball and leading the game, it's waiting for, and yet you look at boxing, you could argue it's no different to counter-punching in boxing, which is appreciated because of its timing and precision.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a point for both sides there, but then it does seem like certain sides are better at that and certain sides aren't. I mean, you know, we also look at the way that Scotland have played in qualifying as well, and then they drew just the other night 2-2 with Slovenia. And the Scots are out of the World Cup playoffs. Chris?
Yes, I mean, Strachan's blamed genetics, which I just found thoroughly bizarre. to look at that Scotland squad, I know Burke isn't in fantastic form, but the fact that he's shunted into the under-21s doesn't necessarily make sense to me, because I would have thought he'd be really good for what they need, the senior national team. And actually, even looking at the squad that played against Slovenia and Slovakia, I managed to catch both games, there's some very tidy players in there. You've got Darren Fletcher in midfield, Kieran Tierney at fullback, who is played on the right but is a left footer. Is a good player. Lee Griffiths, I think, for this standard against lesser nations, can be a real handful and scored the goal against Slovakia, if memory serves. So, for me personally, I'm a little bit confused as to what Strachan's trying to do. Personally, if I was head of the Scottish FA, I'd be maybe to look and to move him on, because as good a player as he was, I just don't think it translates. I get the sense with him it was a little bit more talent that was honed rather than an actual understanding of the game when he was a player, just from interviews I've heard with him. And so I just think Scotland's ready to maybe move on a bit. They've got some promising young players. Burke is one, obviously. Ryan Gold is seemingly making some inroads in Portugal now. So I think the time to transition is probably now. I'm not saying that Scotland are a hugely underperforming side, but I don't think they're achieving their potential either.
Yeah, certainly is an interesting one there. I mean, then, of course, we see the opposite of that, Nico, and Egypt qualifying. I mean, look at the incredible scenes there as Mohamed Salah gets a late penalty to put them one step closer.
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible achievement, and one really that, I think a lot of people are surprised that Egypt isn't more involved with World Cup tournaments as of late, and this is the first time that they've qualified in quite a while. So you have to imagine that it's an incredibly proud moment for him. I think they've already renamed some elementary schools after Mohamed Salah because of the important part that he played in not only that game, obviously converting the penalty in the dying moments of the game, but also the five goals and I think three assists or four assists that he had in their total qualification. So, you know, you hope it's one of those things that they can capitalize on and go into the tournament with I guess it's too cliche to say, but maybe a little bit of momentum and be sort of one of the underdogs that can really reach for the stars, because I think that's kind of what's beautiful about the World Cup is that you have teams that, as much as maybe we don't like the qualification process, are there mainly by merit. And so when you have that and when you have some of these great stories, you can see some amazing things that are brought to us by the football. So, yeah.
It's all their bollocks storyline anyway, isn't it? We write whatever the hell we want. Iceland also qualified, Chris. What a lovely qualification for them. Lovely to see them at the World Cup. Lovely to see their... has their trajectory continued in the same way?
I would say so. I mean, you know, it was a fairly good win tonight. I don't think they were that great from what I was reading, but they were still able to get a victory. I think the perception of them as plucky underdogs is, I think, being rewritten, and rightly so, because actually there's a lot of time, effort, preparation and precision in this. So I think we'll see that at the next tournament, that yes, they're not an international powerhouse by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think they are just 11 guys that stand behind the ball and wait for you to make a mistake. I think there's something more growing there, and there's been something more developed there. So I think the stability of qualifying for tournaments will only improve them further because of experience, because of a number of different factors. So I think, yeah, that's only a good thing in my eyes.
Interesting. Very interesting stuff. Where do the USA sit, Nico?
Let me look that up.
It's going to be tricky for them, isn't it, Chris? Because I think so many people have had such high expectations not so long ago. Those have significantly fallen.
Yeah, and I mean, the difficulty the US have had is that transition from Klinsmann, who I think was almost definitely stayed too long, to Bruce Arena, who after a decent start, you know, kind of had a little bit of a drop himself. And you could see the similarities between the two, because I don't think either is much of a detail coach. I don't think either wants to really get into the weeds and instruct players on an individual basis as to what they do relative to the 10 around them. I thought against Panama, he made a very bold decision, which was wise in playing Pulisic as the 10, because I think Pulisic alongside Jozy Altidore is not just the best thing for the US, but it's the best thing for Jozy.
But I think with Panama, it was as good as, you know, as good as the US were, it was Panama being pretty, pretty bad.
Yeah, I was going to come on to that and say that Panama were incredibly uneven playing a 4-4-2 against a diamond formation, because it meant that Pulisic had, if he wanted, the opportunity to sit deep and pick a pass, or he could make runs through the defensive line, which is what he did for his opening goal. So there's credit that goes there for Bruce for thinking of that and implementing it, but also you have to caveat it with the deficiency of Panama. Going to play Trinidad is... Look, Trinidad haven't been great. They still managed to scare Mexico the other night. They took the lead in Azteca before capitulating in the last sort of 15 minutes, I think it was, where they conceded three. I think realistically, if the US has any confidence in getting out of the group and in getting out of anything next summer, they have to believe they can go to Trinidad and win. The kind of responsibility and all that stuff, it's all in their hands. They control their destiny. A win guarantees them, and then even with some other results going different ways, they could still, I think, lose and qualify. So the temptation is to be a bit defensive, and I personally think probably Bruce will look to take less risks, because I think if he plays that diamond, they'll be opened up, because that's one thing that showed itself the other night, was that when you play that diamond, you open Michael Bradley to a lot of defensive work, and he's not got the legs. I'm not saying that he's old, but he's just not naturally got the legs to cover that much ground to stop that many players. So I think a slight tweak needs to be made, perhaps to a 4-2-3-1. I think that's maybe a better formation that keeps that number 10 role for Pulisic, but gives them that double pivot cover for when Trinidad try and break on them.
It's certainly been weird during this international break to look at the difference in form for some of the players. Weirdly, the other day, I think it was, who was it who said it? It might have been Martin Keown said that Gareth Southgate needs to be the one to coach Jordan Henderson, because Henderson's not being coached to do certain things by Klopp. I think it was sort of there to sound a bit divisive in the media, but I think Martin Keown said it in a much more reasonable way. Any other things from the international break catch your eye? I mean, Italy got the 1-0 win against Albania, which I think makes things in their group a little more interesting, certainly. Israel lost 1-0 to Spain, which again makes things a lot more interesting in their group, considering those guys are battling it out. There's a lot of countries who are going to be missing out. But ultimately, Chris, I think the weird side of this World Cup is going to be really not having every one of those big names there. There may not be an Argentina by the time you're listening to this. There may not be a Portugal, those sort of teams.
Yeah, I mean, Argentina, the big name at the top of that list, I think. And I watched them against Peru the other night, and, you know, it wasn't for want of trying that they didn't score. They just seem so nervous in the final third. And at the same time, you know, watching Sampaoli, I don't understand why. Okay, I get that Icardi maybe wasn't as fit or as sharp as he could have been, but the fact that Sampaoli leaves Icardi on the bench, Dybala on the bench, and opts to start with Benedetto up front, who just, to me at least, looked like the occasion got to him. It's quite a bizarre set of decisions. And even in the game, he swaps Benega for Gago, which is like an almost identical swap in terms of style of play. And then Gago, I think, does his knee ligaments or something like that, tears his ACL within seconds of coming on and playing. And you think, well, I mean, in some ways that's kind of, it's a harsh lesson, but at the same time, it's kind of what you deserve for making such a daft substitution, because then he has to put Enzo Perez on and he can't add anyone to the attack because that's his third substitution. If they do make it, I don't think they go anywhere near as far as they did last time. Even with Messi, and really? That's where part of me, yeah, with Sampaoli in charge here, just because I think him as a person, he's too unstable for that position, and I think as a team mentally right now, they look far too in their own heads. A lot of them, I would say, Messi aside, Messi gets a lot of criticism. I understand that he's the world's best, etc., etc. But I thought he did everything but score the other night. He created chances. He did everything.
Yeah, I thought he was really phenomenal. Yeah, I thought he was phenomenal the other night. I thought it was really unlucky that they. I thought rewatching the game, I thought they could have won you know, 5-0. They had a lot of chances. And maybe you're right in saying that Benedetto, you know, the occasion got to him. But I think it's weird talking about Sampaoli in that way, because I admire him so much and the things that he did at Sevilla. And this is really like the culmination of his career to some extent, or at least that's how he viewed it in some previous interviews, because he's been wanting to work with Messi for so long. Him getting the Argentina job was like the perfect way for him to leave Sevilla. Obviously, he didn't go out on the best terms, obviously, crashing out of the Champions League against Leicester. But for him to sort of, because I often kind of liken coaches to chefs. I mean, it's like he's a really good chef and he works in some, you know, not so great restaurants. And then he finally gets to a really nice restaurant that can afford all the ingredients that he wants to have. And he's put in this difficult situation that maybe to some extent he's added to by having Argentina in this difficult position in qualifying. But it's a little sad because, you know, this was such a big moment for him. If they don't qualify, then you imagine, you know, Messi's kind of getting on his career 4 years down the road, you know, he'll be 34 or 33, however old he'll be. And it's not going to be the same. So this is really the chance for him and a really big moment in his managerial career, as well as Messi's player career, to do something big. And I honestly thought it was going to go way differently. I think if they qualify, they'll shape up by the time they get to Russia and do really well. And that's honestly what I'm hoping for, because I really like the style of football that he's had at both Sevilla and Argentina, minus the results. So
minus the results, yeah. But also then there's a lot of criticism for him, isn't there? There does seem to be a lot of criticism. If you don't buy into the philosophy, then people seem to be able to pick holes.
Yeah, and I mean, with Sampaoli, that's certainly true, and certainly with Messi in Argentina, which is an extremely weird thing to hear, I think, from people that mainly consume European football. He gets a ton of criticism from people in his home nation because they feel, you know, he's been to four finals with Argentina, and they feel like they should have at least won one of those. And he actually has been to one final and won with Argentina, but it was in the Olympics. And so, I mean, as far as footballing trophies go on an international level, I don't think people cared about that as much. And so this identity that Argentina has created for themselves, I mean, yeah, I guess created for themselves to some extent, that they're serial chokers in finals, I think is one that is really difficult for someone like Messi to live with, because every time I see him play for Argentina, I think he does everything that he possibly can to make the difference. And oftentimes, you know, he does in some way. But I just happen to believe that it's kind of, you know, bad luck that is plagued his team or himself in a lot of these finals. And it's really sad to see, because in my opinion, you know, he's by far and away the greatest player of all time. And for him to maybe retire without ever achieving any sort of international glory with his home nation is something that's going to, I think, haunt him as a person.
Interesting. Yeah, and certainly, well, maybe even vindicate or justify certain people in the short term, at least. Chris, of course, there's been lots of other news during the international break. A lot of people talking about the Ballon d'Or. Big news, Ballon d'Or-wise, I guess. Seen the list?
I haven't. I've seen some of the names.
Well, they're all you might expect.
Well, they're all humans. What about you, Nico? Have you seen the list? I mean, there's seven nominees in there from Real Madrid. There's three from Barcelona. That's only one more.
There's two from Liverpool.
There are two from Liverpool. And you know what? I can justify both of those entrants. Although,
you think so?
Would you really say they're in the top 30 players in Europe this year?
My main beef with this list, because as I understand it, it's in the second year of its new format, which is it's not done by FIFA or UEFA anymore. It's done by France Football Magazine, and I just, why aren't there more defenders? It seems like they're throwing them in as like a, yeah, we have to put them in there, but there are plenty of great defenders that I think oftentimes we just think of these awards as purely like offensive awards, like who made the biggest difference in our minds, and we don't appreciate what defenders do, or maybe what players who influence the other side of the ball more often than not do. And it just, they kind of throw some of the more attacking defenders on here as like a gimme in some sense. Like the only really defensive player on here is Mats Hummels and maybe N'Golo Kanté. But even then, you know, he does contribute a lot to how Chelsea progressed the ball. So I would like to see like more pure defenders on the list, I guess, but I'm not disappointed. And I think to speak to your point about the Liverpool players, I think it speaks to how well Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool have done to maybe accentuate their best qualities as players. And I certainly think they deserve to be there as well as, you know, some of the other guys in England, like Kevin De Bruyne and Harry Kane. I think they all, you know, deserve a place in that shortlist.
So. I guess Sadio Mane is sort of building towards that sort of status, isn't he, Chris?
I would say so. I think there's an element of consistency needed, but yeah, I think it's not egregious to put him in that category, even if it's not as a winner or a top three finish.
It's an interesting one. He's certainly building towards African Player of the Year. There are obviously, what about Bonucci though? I mean, surely Bonucci's maybe one of the...
But he's like I said, it's Marcelo... So Marcelo's on there. Bonucci, like you said, is on there as well. And he's like an offensive defender. I think part of what made him so great under both Conte and Allegri is that 3-5-2 or 3-4-3 Juventus system was based around his ability to progress the ball and the things that he can do from a passing perspective, you know, using him as like this guy that can distribute the ball so well across the pitch and transitioning that. It's almost an offensive entity, and that's part of what we've seen from his move to Milan is that, you know, him playing him in a back four maybe as a more traditional defender. I'm not going to say he's a bad defender by any stretch of the imagination, but I think in more typical back four kind of situations, he's not as good, and that isn't to speak to his quality. He's a great defender, but I think like I talk about a lot, I think the system has a lot to do with how good a player can look, and Bonucci is one of those guys.
Something, I mean, it's not really the same prize to win anymore, is it, Chris? That's, I guess, part of what a lot of people will be discussing. It doesn't carry that same, the same gravitas that it once had.
No, and I do think maybe that stemmed from when Iniesta didn't win it.
Interesting. Okay, I thought it stemmed from the fact that all of the top guys in the company were taken out. But, I mean, you know, sure.
Wait, are we talking about the Ballon d'Or here?
Yeah.
I think that or the I think Manuel Neuer had a good case to be in the top three a few years ago and was excluded. And I think when a competition like that starts to feel closed off, then it's ultimately going to lose its, not its relevancy per se, but its prestige a little bit.
Is this Neymar's year potentially, or are we still talking Ronaldo at this point?
I think the fact that Ronaldo won the Champions League is a huge influence or deciding factor in that. I think it's hard to look past Ronaldo because he has the trophies to back it up, and often those things make for an easy narrative, if you will, when you're trying to find a winner.
This is sort of the first year, though, isn't it, Nico, where we're seeing the chasing pack of players who are wanting to be up there for the very top names beginning to look as impressive as a Ronaldo or a Messi in terms of consistency, at least. You know, we're seeing some players putting together great performances week after week. Not obviously no one quite of that level of Ronaldo or Messi, but they're, you know, we're beginning to speak about them in the same breath.
To some extent, yeah, I think so. I think because Ronaldo and Messi's sort of astronomical goal and assist numbers have sort of cooled down over the past year and a half. We're starting to see, like you said, the catching pack sort of look a little bit better in terms of the comparison. I think in years past, we saw, it was either going to one of those two, and that was really the only choice. The rest of it and the nominations and the inclusions in sort of the 30-man shortlist was more of an honor that they had already received just by being there. And the competition was mainly between those two. So, yeah, I would say, you know, it's sort of getting closer, and maybe it's transitioning towards this newer generation, obviously with Messi being over 30, with Ronaldo being over 30. The time for these guys to win these awards is maybe coming to an end over the next 1 or 2 years. It could be Neymar's year. I think it's obviously the voting is coming to a close as to who gets the award now. So like Chris said, the trophies have a lot to do with it. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that's how the people who decide who get it generally. But, you know, I think it wouldn't necessarily be out of place to suggest someone like Tony Kroos is entirely deserving of the same award, because he never has the possibility to score as many goals as Messi or Ronaldo does, but he was as influential, if not more so,
in
Real Madrid's dominance. So, you know, he's on there.
He is quite literally on the list. There's probably going to be other news during. I mean, obviously England qualified for the World Cup, but no one really cares. They'll get very close. They'll talk about, you know, having lions on the shirt, and then we'll all move on. Is there anything else from the international break that particularly caught your guys' eyes? I mean,
should we say who we think's gonna win it? Each of us,
one. Right, ready? One, two, three. Germany.
No, I meant the Ballon d'Or.
Right. Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
Germany
for the Ballon d'Or. I mean, certainly Germany have performed very impressively recently. Is it beyond the bounds of reasonableness to say that we'll see a German win it sometime soon? Yeah, probably. Go ahead, Nico. Who do you think is going to win?
I
thought you'd have had a name already, but fair enough.
No. I think with it being sort of this France football restructuring, I guess, of how they give out the award and who's deeming the person worthy, and given the fact that Neymar is now in league, I'd probably say it goes to Neymar. This is his first year of many to win.
Surely if it does, then we can all call bullshit, Chris.
I think Ronaldo will win it.
I think the reason Ronaldo will win it is because Ronaldo isn't from Barcelona. And I think if Neymar can't win it, they rather Messi did. Although Messi hasn't, I understand he had a great year. There was in terms of he set up a lot of things, but it's really end product, I guess, is what Kristen's sort of saying. But
I would say the thing about Messi and the thing about these guys is that when they have a year like less so of the year that they had before, a lesser year than the one that they had before, it looks bad, even though their lesser numbers may still equate to over 50 goals or over a certain amount of goals.
And I get that. I guess it's also then you could make the opposite argument of that and say, well, you know, Neymar isn't actually getting that much end product currently in PSG. I mean, he's got like a team he probably enjoys playing with to some extent. But is there an end product to it of trophies?
I guess, so what you're asking is what's more important, performance or trophies?
Well, I'm not even saying that. I'm saying maybe trophies validate performances sometimes. And maybe if the performance doesn't win a trophy for the very top guys, that could taint it somewhat, or could definitely make it more difficult to make a compelling argument for them.
Yeah, definitely. But I think hopefully the people deciding will be well aware of the fact that it's not an individualistic sport. And although, yes, a lot of these players do change the very results and influence greatly how their teams perform, I think it should still be down to, you know, if you win no trophies, you have as much of a chance as anyone else.
I guess what I would say is then, if that was the case, then people like Dries Mertens would be spoken about in the same breath, and that's clearly not the case, and that's why we all sort of go along with this as well, because we very rarely dig into it in any great depth anyway. So I'm gonna say I think Ronaldo. Who would I like to see win it? That's right,
Sadio Mane.
That's right, Sadio Mane. Well, obviously Xabi Alonso, but Sadio Mane second, definitely. Let's go back. We asked you guys for some fantastic questions, and we will do this as a Q&A pod predominantly. Chris Ryan Bailey asks, why do dogs hate you blowing in their faces? And he means with your breath, but stick their heads out of car windows.
It's because
when a dog sticks its head out of a car window, it's able to smell a lot more things.
Because obviously you're passing through a large area theoretically in a car, so it's a stimulating sensation for.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Blower is just blowing in their faces, doing nothing for them.
Yeah, I wish we could maybe stop talking about blowing in their face, but yeah. And you know what? That's a great answer, and I have no doubt that you actually went away and researched that. Lawrence just interviewed Alan Shearer, but who is the best favourite player you guys interviewed / talked to? Chris, I'll come to you first on this one.
The interview I've probably enjoyed most is Mike Brella or Benny Failhaber. Those are the two that I've enjoyed most. If they're talking from like a Geordie meets his hero with Shearer in relation to that, the one that I was a little bit starstruck was probably Ian Wright.
Really?
Yeah.
Why Ian Wright? Why were you so starstruck with Ian Wright? I think a lot of people are starstruck with Ian Wright, but why?
Because to be very candid, obviously I grew up watching him in the Premier League and Match of the Day and all that stuff, and I'll be very honest, the first few times I ever met him I didn't really think he liked me, because he was almost a little bit standoffish, I felt, but when we actually sat down to talk and we had like a proper conversation and he was asking me about things and stuff like that, then I was kind of like, yeah, you know, that surreal moment. So yeah, that's probably that. I mean, personally, if I was to have that Shearer moment that Brian's been so lucky to have, it would probably be with Rafa Benitez at this point, just because I think I like his personality more than anything. But,
and he's a more prolific goal scorer. maybe if managers took credit for the goals that their strikers scored, maybe. Yeah, you're right. Maybe just in terms of sheer interest. And what you also do, you also maybe sort of your judgment of an interview is partly to do with what you think you're going to get. And I think with Shearer, when we originally stepped in through, and we weren't really sure on how far we were going to get with an interview, because not because he's a boring person, which I think a lot of people mischaracterize him as, but because he's a very private man. And that was something I really respected, but it definitely made it more difficult to interview him, because I actually felt a lot of respect for the privacy he wanted. Nico, best person you've spoken to or interviewed?
I would say the person that I've spoken to that has the most, I guess, recognition amongst the people that would be listening would be Mark Hughes. I got to be in a mixed zone with him when they came and played Orlando City, and I was doing some stuff for an Orlando City website. But, you know, I didn't enjoy that all that much. And then I guess the person that I would really want to sit down with and talk to would be, I think the obvious answer is Pep Guardiola, like a really good bottle of wine and Pep Guardiola. That'd be nice.
You paint a very compelling image. I would say Mark Van Bommel was the nicest one I've met. And, who would I like? Xabi Alonso. Ideal replacements for Ozil and Sanchez when they leave at the end of the season. Anyone? You want to nominate anyone? I mean, surely... Dries Mertens is an exciting one, maybe, Nico?
Yeah, but he's like 31 already, and then he'd be like 32, 33 when he gets to Arsenal in the summer, if he did.
I guess we can always... Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we have seen a few aging stars in there, but he's hardly a long-term replacement. I see your point.
Yeah. I think probably to the more creative side of that question, or the creative end of that, I think Thomas Lamar would fit in really well at Arsenal. And Sanchez is a difficult one to replace in terms of how much he creates by himself. But I would probably say, I mean, a lot of people are talking about Leon Goretzka as like a really talented young player that could do things in the Premier League. So maybe Thomas Lemar and Leon Goretzka.
Mm. It's a lovely combo. FSG have now been at Liverpool 7 years. Feels like they haven't addressed the fans in about five, though. What do you think about mute owners? FSG certainly are an interesting investing group. Apparently, the same people who are interested in Newcastle are also now interested in Liverpool, fronted by a number of different people who have been seen at a number of different grounds. I think it definitely annoys the people who are close, much, much closer to the club. But I actually think there can also be statements made in what you do off the pitch. You know, we've seen a stand upgraded in Liverpool. We've seen a lot of people doing good in other ways on and off the pitch. We'll see. Let's put it that way. Nico, yeah, although I am cynical of a lot of what they do, that doesn't mean they're perfect by any means, but I also think some people can be maybe ungrateful for having at least more stable owners than some people have. Nico, you've got to go.
I do. It's been great.
See you again soon.
I think you guys will close it out well. So,
thanks. See you later. Have a good date.
Well, you guys might actually be hung up on because I made the call if I hang up. So
try it and we'll see what happens.
All right. See ya.
It's all fine. There's some more interesting questions. Chris, thoughts on Real Madrid's inefficiency in set pieces this season? Does Zizi need to revisit this area? Is that one you actually feel compelled to answer, or are you bored by that?
Genuinely got no opinion on that, sorry. Yeah. I'd love to give you some insight, but yeah.
No. There's no insight.
By all means, whoever asked the question, by all means, tweet us your opinion or DM us your opinion. I'd be curious to read it.
If Sanchez goes to City and Ozil goes to Arsenal, which Manchester club is getting the better deal? Good question, Packed Mouse.
If Sanchez goes to City and Ozil goes to Man United, probably Sanchez to City, because Ozil, and I only say this because Ozil to Man United gives them something they've already kind of got, which is creators. They've got Mkhitaryan in there who plays that number 10 role, can drive with it, can create. So in theory, you're just getting a better version of Mkhitaryan if that's the way you want to look at it. Whereas I don't think City have anyone like Sanchez right now. So they're getting a completely new tool to add to their kind of arsenal. So yeah, I think if that's the way you're looking at it, yeah, but Sanchez is the better one.
It really would be ironic if when either of them signed the player, the manager used it and said, "We've added a new tool to our arsenal," if you'll forgive the pun. then who else was? There was a really good one. Have I just missed it? Have I just gone past it? Here we go. Who would be a better number 9 to complete, in inverted commas, Spain? Says Tapuamusa, Harry Kane, or Lewandowski. In my opinion, it would be Lever. But curious to hear your take, Kristen.
I think probably Harry Kane, just because I think, if you look at him, the fact he wears the number 10 is a subtle nod to what he has in his skill set, which is an ability to play deeper and be as much of a facilitator as a finisher. And I think that works probably better for Spain, because when they've had that pure like number 9 type, like Costa, hasn't always worked for them, because he's wanted to do something different to what the midfield wants to do.
Yeah, I agree. That's a really good point. Although I would also be interested to see which coach they mix him with, and it depends on the coach you mix with, obviously. Drew tweets the scenes after Egypt qualified for the World Cup in the 95th minute and the penalty after a 28-year absence. I mean, Chris, I know a lot of people have been tweeting their cliches about oh, isn't this amazing? But there really were incredible scenes in Egypt after they qualified. And I think there's a lot of consideration there about everything that's been going on politically as well as on the pitch in recent years, and maybe celebrating a positive of being, you know, part of this tournament is, you know, not only politically are they able to do that, but also socially, you know, they're free to do that too.
Well, they've just been so dominant in African football. In terms of the continent, they've been the leaders often and the most successful teams. So their constant omission from the World Cup, due to performance, I must add, it has always been as much of a surprise as a disappointment. So I think to see them finally qualify, and then, yeah, to do it in that circumstances, that's always going to be fantastic, because it's that emotional moment that we all kind of yearn for, that last-minute goal. I'm sure everyone listening to this has a last-minute goal that they go to when you just say that phrase. So
that was incredible.
It'll be great to see them. I actually think Egypt, as a footballing country, and I'm speaking more from a recruitment side here, I think it's slept on a little bit. I think there's talent in there, and guys like Mo Salah prove that. So yeah, I'll be curious to see what this World Cup does for those kind of players and those that maybe want to try and get a route out of Egyptian football. I think Higazi is a good example, the guy who just signed for West Brom. He's looked really solid since joining on loan.
It's been fascinating. And obviously, I had a conversation with someone the other day who was talking about all of the previous Egyptians in the Premier League. I mean, you got Mido. There was another much smaller player. He played for Wigan for a little. I can't remember what his name was, though.
My name is Zaki.
Zaki, yeah. Zaki was a great player.
Yeah, there's him. There's obviously Mido, as you touched on, Hossam Ghali. Was at Tottenham and that famous derby side that went down with the record low points. He was a decent midfielder. His head was
played alongside Robbie Savage.
Rewired.
There was that as well. Yeah. There's been a decent list. Who's your best underrated Egyptian? Maybe even Mo Salah can fit into that. Did you see, Chris, and the pictures this week of all of the Brazil players wearing oxygen masks after they played in I can't remember which country it was. It was somewhere in South American qualifying. Bolivia, yes. Allegedly the worst place to go and play football in the world if you're a professional footballer, obviously. Beautiful place, I'm told, but very high up and therefore much less oxygen. Neymar said it was hell.
Yeah, it really does take it out of the lungs. And I've seen the photograph because I tweeted about it on the Front 3 account. So, yeah, I mean, that's the funny thing. I have been doing some accumulator work for BetBull, kind of trying to predict stuff and win some money for people that are wise and or stupid enough to follow me. And one of the most obvious bets of last week was Brazil to win by a goal or draw, because yeah, it absolutely takes out your lungs. And if you watched that game not realizing where it was, you would question why Brazil was so lackadaisical, but it wasn't that at all. They were being very conscious to conserve energy. And that's why, even though Bolivia have, in the last few years, been, I would say, fairly consistently beaten away from home. I mean, they were not a good side in the Copa America Centenario. Yeah, when you look at that home record, you think, crikey, they must really get up for it. It's not that at all. It's purely, I don't know the correct term for geographical advantages that benefit them.
This one comes from Jushin Thunderlager, real name. Is Casemiro the best defensive midfielder currently playing in football? Chris, yes or no? I mean, it's difficult to think of a better, more informed player, at least.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, on current form, definitely, and that's one of the greatest aspects of Zidane, is that he was self aware enough to realise the need for a player like that.
Yeah, although you would say that Benitez implemented him and Zidane picked him up.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
As often happens with Rafa Benitez sides, I look forward to Alan Pardew returning to Newcastle and taking all the credit at some point. Who was better in their prime? This is coming off the back of that. Alonso, Pirlo, Mark van Bommel. Alonso. It's the clear answer. Chris, but who was better in their prime for you, Alonso, Pirlo, or Mark van Bommel?
Yeah, Alonso van Poppel's a bit of a weird one in that. With the greatest of respect to him as a player and everything, but like it's a little bit one of those things is not like the other.
He was definitely dominant. He was more of a high-end journeyman than anything else, and definitely much more of a midfield destroyer than Alonso or Pirlo.
Yeah, it was more aggressive, whereas as Pirlo and Xabi were kind of, what's the Italian term, registas, sort of film directors, if you will.
In a way, I mean, yeah, I guess... I suppose Xabi Alonso is an interesting one, really.
Maybe he became that. I mean, you know Alonso's pretty much better than I, but I was watching some of his Bayern stuff the other night, just because, and he did, he seemed incredibly deep and orchestrating rather than kind of more advanced.
Definitely, again, I always go back to the old phrase, and, you know, sort of something which not many of the stats go for, but especially considering that Pirlo retired over the last few days, he was a fantastic player, but... maybe underappreciated for many years, especially in a fantastic AC Milan team and other incredible sides that he was part of. Alonso was lucky to have the career he had, but then also shepherded play so often. And you can't really judge that, or there aren't many prominent stats that judge that. So I'll be interested to see the way that goes. Let us know on Twitter, guys, what you think the best... in their prime, central midfielder, so who sort of sits deep in the world was. There's a lot of options there. Not least, maybe a partnership of Alonso and Mascherano. They were fantastic. Busquets definitely gets in there as well, but he's not the same sort of player. There are a lot of fantastic players from that position. Not a question, but Statman Dave should have to wear full Man City kit at a Man United game for the Zlatan thing. Get it over with, said Ryan Jenkins. Too right, Ryan. Keep on tweeting your suggestions for what Dave should have to do. I'll be interested to see what you guys want him to do. And there's definitely something he should have to do.
Trying to get the saddle on the horse. I mean, you know what I mean? He's got to take ownership at this point.
Yeah, and to be fair, there's a lot going on in his life in terms of training things. But Dave is very good at dodging. Why do you think the quality of leagues like La Liga and Serie A so much better than the Premier League? Is that necessarily true? I mean, you know, if you look through the quality of each of those leagues, there are some fantastic players in there and some great teams, but I don't think it's necessarily a better quality league than the Premier League.
No, I still think it's horses for courses. I still do believe that. Yes, you crown a champion of Europe every season, I get that, and that's totally fair. But I don't think that when it comes to those little clutch of top European leagues, there really is one that's markedly better. I would say, look, between the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A and the Bundesliga, I'd say it's much of a muchness personally. I would maybe put France just underneath there, but even then, again, much of a muchness. I don't think there's this clear superior. Otherwise, you would have the kind of dominance in Europe that we just don't see. Whereas the last few years, I think it's been spread out, admittedly, amongst a few different countries.
Mido says, can we stop with the Ballon d'Or? Mido, I'm not a million miles away from the way you feel about that. Is Kane or Lukaku world class? I feel like Lukaku is. Do you think Kane is as well, Chris?
Yeah, the rate he's scoring right now. Yeah, I mean that's again. I think that's another one of those debates where it just seems so arbitrary to me in terms of does it change him drastically if he's now deemed world class as opposed to not?
Good point.
I think he's an elite level striker. That's all you have and can say is that he is a highly performing striker that at this present moment would improve almost any team that he was put into.
This one comes from Karen Karras, and he says, this one's to everyone, so just you and me, Chris. What is your favourite match you've watched live? I think that means you've got to have been there.
I probably would have said there was a Newcastle game where they beat Chelsea in the last minute that was all right. But then I think prior to that, I probably would have said the last game of last season where they won the title.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it's the last minute nature and the fact that even with all the technology and everything, the players couldn't find out, so it was up to the crowd to kind of inform them. So yeah, it was quite fun.
The crowd and yeah, that is interesting. I suppose yeah, there are the there was a great story told by who was it? It might have been even Alan Shearer on the podcast where he speaks about staying up or no, not staying up. Maybe winning the title, yeah, with Blackburn. And he finds out that United have not won against West Ham. And they find out from the murmurings around the stadium. And also seeing Kenny Dalglish hugging Ray Harford, I think it would be on the halfway line. What is the strangest place you have had to retrieve a football from when you were a kid? Thanks, Charles and... to need is it's a good question. Charles is a good guy, by the way. I suppose I kicked a lot of foot. Go ahead, Chris.
In Thailand, right, there's these bars you can go to.
Yeah.
The weirdest place.
I've never seen the football like that, but all right.
It hit the back wall. It was really impressive.
Sure it did, mate.
Actually, I used to, my old house when I was a kid used to back onto a large wood. And it was a kind of steep drop actually down into it. So yeah, that's probably the weirdest place.
I've definitely had to go into nettles before to get a football. We used to go to, I guess, like you say, Chris, it tends to be a forest you have to retrieve it from. It sounds a lot creepier if you've watched the film It.
Forest, water.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. It's all forest. I mean, we used to have a river running through the middle of our park and we lost a fair few footballs in the river. Because you just don't get a football back once it's in the river. I was talking about this with my dad the other day. At the end of our garden, there was a little section where if you kicked it into the neighbour's garden, you would have to get in and get out really quickly because there was a dog that would come over. And the dog would... The problem was, if you didn't get in and get out, in that time, then you'd have attracted the attention of the dog that would then know there was a ball there, whereas it wouldn't necessarily always see the ball was landing. So you could sort of have a bit of time. And I definitely lost a World Cup. I lost a World Cup ball from 1998. It was a ball about the World Cup, not the World Cup ball. It was a ball about the World Cup where it had all the world's flags on, and it was a really great ball. But I lost it to a dog. So it was sad at the time. Good question. Thank you very much, Charles. I would look for more like that. Where else have I had to retrieve a ball from? Definitely on holiday. Just you know. Getting a football from places is tricky. What do you make of Pochettino's influence on developing English players for the national team? Does it bring a glimmer of hope for the future, Chris?
Yeah, there was some mad stuff. I think it was on Euro Football Daily or whatever it's called about how he's had a role
Thanks.
In something like the last something to do like the last dozen or so England debutants or something like that. I think look, anytime a coach is helping with that, that's great. And I've already said fairly recently that the struggle for him is matching or maintaining that development alongside trying to win something. I thought Harry Winks looked good the other night. I think it's slightly disheartening that it's not English coaches doing it. Just because, you know, there's an added incentive in there. I think maybe that's highlights that frailty with the system. I think it more points to him showing faith in players that he knows can do it. I don't think he's doing it for some principled reason, like, oh, I want to help the national team out. It's because he believes they're good enough and trust them. And maybe that is a lesson that we need to learn.
Gabriel Cesar says, should Spalletti receive greater recognition? Currently joint second with Inter after leading Roma to their highest points joint points total this season. Not to mention, he introduced the false nine system with Totti before Guardiola implemented it at Barcelona. But Guardiola gets all the credit. There is actually there's a lot of argument going on very often in Italy as to whether Guardiola is just a rip-off of a lot of the systems that they created, but that's another conversation. Spalletti, Chris, should he receive greater recognition? I mean, possibly so.
Yeah, when you consider that Ventura is in charge of the national team and making an absolute mess of it, and you've got a coach that's that good sitting on your doorstep, albeit in work, imagine it's infuriating being an Italy fan at the minute.
No, it's a very good point, yeah, and obviously everything that goes on. Although Italian coaches, and Conte is one of those, are able to enter that expertise area at any point they want. And I'd imagine they're quite welcomed as well. There is a lot going on, especially at Coverciano and a couple of other places in Italy right now, to try and progress where Italian football and then therefore wider football is going. Chris, I'm going to finish on this question. This comes from Brandon Westside. He says, who do you think is going to win MLS Cup?
Oh, crikey.
Sorry, I thought it would be a good one to finish on, but...
No, it is. It's you know, the funny thing is, I guess you could say it mirrors the Premier League in a little ways, because the team that starts the greatest does not always carry that through. So, like, you look at Seattle, who won it last year. They were very bad.
You can say shit if you want, that is alright.
So I don't think you'll have that sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here, that late surge like this time last year. I think the teams are a lot more consistent in their play. I thought about the Red Bulls as a dark horse, but I'd really like it if Atlanta won, I'm not going to lie, because they've played some brilliant stuff this year. If I've ever got a choice between A game and an Atlanta game, I'll usually stick the Atlanta game on, because you know it's going to be entertaining.
Okay, interesting stuff. I'm also interested to know, Chris, have you picked an NBA team for this season?
I have decided to remain loyal to my missus, and I've gone for the New York Knicks, which is learning is not the wisest of ideas.
Yeah, especially Brave this season. They do not look great. Carmelo's gone. I mean, Porzingis is still there, but it's tricky for you guys.
They've got Kanter, haven't they? And Enes Kanter.
Yeah, good luck.
And some Tim Hardaway Jr. He's back. That's usually a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly encouraging.
So good, we brought him back.
I mean, I guess it's encouraging for you guys. Yeah, looks good. I'll put it that way. For certain teams in the league, Cavs look fantastic this year. They've got a great lineup. Not a Cavs fan though. I'm a Spurs fan. Ordered my authentic jersey today. Hopefully that arrives soon. Looking forward to seeing. There is something that's quite good about the jerseys this year in the NBA though, Chris. You can put your phone to the logo or there's like a little, I don't know, I guess a registration bit on it. Like, you know, where you sort of see the sizing. It tends to be on the sort of left hip of most American sports teams. And you put your phone to it and it has NFC and you can catch up with all the latest goings on with your team. I was quite impressed with that. I can't understand why the NBA seems so far ahead of the Premier League. Maybe control of their own stuff. I suppose NBA is sort of quite independent.
Possibly need as well, you know. Like, that's the thing. As popular as basketball is, it's always trying to get an extra dollar from the NFL and less so the NHL. But you know what I mean? There's always like a competition, whereas I think the Premier League, like, even if they lost a significant amount for TV money tomorrow, I don't think they'd be that disappointing, because they still know they're getting an insane amount.
You're saying it'd be good if cricket was stronger?
Yeah, that's the long and short of it. Until bowling picks up, you know, we're never going to be at the forefront of technology.
Let us know who you guys are going to be supporting this NBA season. Maybe who you've got in NFL. I've started to wear a few NFL jerseys around town. I've got a Jets jersey. I think I've got like a couple of Knicks jerseys, actually. I used to have a Giants jersey, so people probably think that's the worst thing I could do. And then I also recently started wearing an Oakland Raiders jersey as well, and a lot of people very passionate for Oakland Raiders. I found out a lot of just walking around town and people being like, hey man, nice jersey. So hey, it's looking good. Still looking for a Colin Kaepernick jersey though, so if anyone's got one, let me know. Anyway, It's been good to have you guys on the show today with us. Thank you very much for listening. Dave and Adam will be back later in the week. Although actually maybe Adam won't because he might be away in Florida, but Dave will be back later in the week, as will Nico. And if you guys want to submit your questions for later in the week, and obviously the weekend preview that we have to put together for the weekend, which comes out on Thursday, we'd love to hear your questions. And of course, your previews for the weekend, you can join us on Fan League as well. Through that, I think there's a link in the description below. You can join our league. I think it's not limited to 100 people anymore. So it's now wide open to you. And you can still win money there. It'd be fantastic if you could join us over there. Fan League's looking good. And Chris, if people want to go read what you've been writing over the international break, what's the most recent thing you've churned out?
I actually did something on the shifting of Premier League fixtures near Christmas and what it says about opinions on fans.
Good. Okay, I like that. We haven't even spoken about the Wembley Cup, but the Wembley Cup happened on the weekend as well. That was good.
Did you enjoy it?
I did, actually. Yeah, it was really nice. It was good to commentate on it. It was good to be there. Made for a really good occasion. Again, I sort of put the argument forward that YouTube football is not necessarily about the quality of football played, though it was a good quality, especially when you match up two teams of a similar level. The legends massively made a difference. Gerrard was incredible to watch. And again, you sort of see the difference between someone of Steven Gerrard's standard and, you know, people who didn't play for years in the Premier League. I'm looking at you, Mr. Savage. Although Robbie Savage was also very good. So I guess that's what was interesting. I was taking a lot of digs at him pre-game. And obviously he's been called a wet salad by certain great people within our friendship group who are fully correct. But he did well. And I've got to admit, he impressed me with what he did. So, mind you, so did William Gallas, and he's not really been trying for quite some time. So, yeah. And obviously the most impressive guy of all of them, Jimmy Conrad, was very impressive. Ran that defensive back line for hashtag United at times. And I was very impressed. You watched as well, Chris. Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the game?
I did. I thought that... our predictions were fairly accurate in that regard. The team with a bit more organisation got stronger as the game went on, which I think is fairly understandable. I think for me next year, assuming it goes on next year, it becomes quite an interesting proposition because, you know, you will see a team, I would imagine, in the F2 or whatever they evolve into next in terms of a name, that has played together at some point. They'll have a bit more understanding. I imagine they'll maybe, maybe pick more of a squad in terms of can you get there, you know, all that kind of stuff. There'll be a lot more. Forethought sounds like the wrong word to me, but there'll be a lot more preparation given to them.
Yeah.
And I think for me that is that's where it becomes an interesting proposition.
Yeah, I agree. It was a good match anyway. Wembley was fantastic. Really great occasion. Fantastic to commentate on it. Meet all those guys and just have a good time. Some genuine down-to-earth guys within that group. And it's fantastic to see some of them out there playing at Wembley, living their dreams. I wish I could do that as well someday. It would be excellent to play at Wembley. Bigger dream even to play at Anfield, obviously. But it's, you know, all in good time. Thank you very much for joining us. Let us know the opinions on, you know, who you're picking for the NBA season, who you think the greatest defensive midfielder is, whether you watched the Wembley Cup, whether it held your interest. And we'll discuss it all on Thursday's pod when we'll be bringing back some of your comments back to us. And of course, your questions you're putting in with the hashtag #IAmTheHole. In the meantime, enjoy the other podcasts you listen to. Football Ramble's good. Totally Football is not bad. Is there any other good football podcast? A Team of John O'Shea's is good.
What's that one that Marcus has just launched?
On the Continent's really good.
That's I enjoy that.
Yeah, that is.
And
good
then
one.
Like a bunch of non-football related ones as well.
And that puts us to shame. Let us know what your favourite football podcast is as well, apart from the Front Three. Great podcast. And we'll see you again real soon right here on the Front Three.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.